Good morning, and welcome to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm your host today, Marisa DeMarco, a reporter here at KUNM. Today, we're talking about anti-panhandling laws in New Mexico. They prohibit things like aggressive panhandling or interactions between people on medians and highway exits and on-ramps. New Mexico's usually on the bad end of the list of states where pedestrians are frequently killed by vehicles, and supporters of Albuquerque's law say it makes intersections safer for pedestrians and drivers. Critics say all of these anti-panhandling laws often violate free speech rights, criminalize poverty, and give law enforcement an excuse to target people who are homeless or who have low incomes. Are anti-panhandling laws just another way to shuffle people experiencing poverty out of view, or are they necessary because of these pedestrian fatalities? Do you live in a city with an anti-panhandling law? How's it working? We want to hear from you. Call now, 277-5866. You can also email letstalk@kunm.org with your comments or questions. Jenny Metzler is the Executive Director of Healthcare for the Homeless, and she's here with us this morning. Good morning, Jenny.
Good morning, Marisa.
So because of your job, you're often asked by folks whether they should give money to panhandlers. What do you say?
I've been answering that question for many years, and it's one of the number one when I talk to community groups. And I always say, do what you're comfortable with. Do what works for you. Once you give that money away, you've given it away. If you have another response, give money to a community organization, buy someone food. Just do it respectfully. But you don't have to do anything, and you have to do what you're comfortable with.
Do you think we too often conflate homelessness and panhandling?
You know, this is why our organization for the last couple decades has really, every time panhandling comes up and responses to panhandling are proposed in our community, we don't really take a position in support or in opposition to issues around panhandling. Our logic goes like this, that there are people who don't have homes who fly signs for some income, and there are people who fly signs who have homes and some who are homeless. And so really our concern is that we focus by talking about it a lot or taking a position or working on the issue that we take focus away from the really central premise that we end homelessness by getting people housed.
And there's also some myths, right, about panhandlers. What are some of the common myths that you see cropping up?
Sure. We hear all kinds of things. I think that there's an idea that they're making a lot of money, that all the money goes to drugs and alcohol, which might well be the case, or that they're sort of scamming. There was a recent study, a survey of panhandlers in San Francisco that actually busted a lot of those myths. They found that only about 3% of the people who were flying signs and experiencing homelessness said that they did not want housing. Most wanted housing. They were only making about $25 a day, working 7 days a week, all day long, and that most 94% of the people used those funds and that cash resource for food and other basic essentials.
Now, there was a series of three killings of homeless folks last year in Albuquerque, and a detective was starting to wonder at the end of the year if the same person or group of people was behind those deaths. And we know that homeless folks are more likely to experience brutal crimes and less likely to call police for help. How do all of these things connect?
I think one of our major concerns is this juxtaposition of how violent and traumatic it is to live in public space. We see people, there are those data, there's what APD is investigating, what is known and reported, and there are many, many more stories, people that we see in our clinics, people that we see in other services and on outreach, where we hear stories of brutal, violent physical victimization, people that are harmed and come in that are never reported, that people are concerned about reporting for retaliation or because generally what we hear is that people feel like they won't be taken seriously or that they matter. And that's really horrific. That's really heartbreaking. On the other hand, people are in public space. We're trying to address that by getting people housed. And survival behaviors are criminalized when there are ordinances such as, you know, public defecation and urination when there's nowhere to use a restroom. You sleep in an alleyway. And so we're concerned about the sort of lack of logic in how we address that when the brutality of the violence and the experience in public space is really urgent.
Mm-hmm. How important is the income some folks might earn by asking for donations? Do you have a sense of that in your work?
By panhandlers asking for donations? You know, I don't really have a sense. I mean, people have, we do We do a program at our organization where we give discounted bus passes to people so they can get around to appointments or work or shelter. Those discounted bus passes have a value of $1. And it can make or break someone's day. Just to put it in context, people that we serve are at 95-96% of the people that we serve are at 100% or below of the federal poverty level. That's extremely, extremely poor. People don't have resources for $1 bus pass. So you can imagine if, you know, if we're at all comparable in Albuquerque to the San Francisco survey, $25 a day is just for basic survival essentials.
All right. We have an email comment from Brandon. He says it's a shame that Albuquerque passed its law and that it only protects non-pedestrians from their own guilt. He says small donations might be really meaningful for homeless veterans and that not all panhandlers are drug addicts and alcoholics. What do you think about what Brandon's saying here, Jenny?
I think I hear that that just really reiterates and validates what I'm saying, that we need to focus our efforts pragmatically on understanding what a problem is really about and then addressing it with approaches that will have an impact.
And if there's one misperception about people experiencing homelessness that you would like to see shifted, what would it be?
So I'm going to combine a couple things here. I think one, that it is a homogeneous group of people that have rather than an experience that people have, the group of people that experience homelessness is diverse. It's for a lot of different reasons. It's primarily about lack of affordable housing and income, and some people are more vulnerable to that. And so it's not a homogeneous sort of monolithic block of people. Number one, and I think the other is this question of choice that people choose to be homeless. I think that's not the issue to be discussed. It's not the question to ask. It's what kind of choices are we offering people as a community in our public policy and our resource allocation so that they can get and remain housed. And that takes choice out of the equation. When the economic choices are not good ones, the choice you might be making is a very logical one of where you're safest and what's most the best approach for you in terms of how you live and where you live. But as a community, we should be taking choice out of the equation and offering the good of the common allocation of our resources and our priorities so that no one has to be on the streets.
And we saw in recent years in Albuquerque these signs that went up at some of these medians put up by the city that said, you know, you don't have to donate to folks. You can call 311 and find a list of programs that you could donate to instead, which always raises the question for me, are there enough services in Albuquerque for the homeless population that are being offered through official charitable organizations?
There are a lot of services. We could definitely have more services. And there is a range that is not always necessarily as well coordinated as it could be. I wouldn't say that we're duplicating if there aren't enough. The primary service, the primary resource to address homelessness is housing, and we do not have enough housing vouchers available for the number of people who experience homelessness and who, during the course of any year in Albuquerque, and who very much want to be housed.
All right. Nick Votero is the co-founder of Two-Way Street, a community publication that's vended and partly created by low-income and homeless folks in Albuquerque. It's designed as a way for the distributors to make money. Good morning, Nick.
Good morning. Thank you for having us.
Tell me about the paper. How does it work?
So Two-Way Street is a community collaboration. It all started with one of the other founders. In college, one thing that he would always do is create literary zines. So people who were in the literature programs or people who enjoyed to write or create content could share their content through these little pocket zines that we would develop and hand out. And that was kind of the impetus for our program after graduation. His master's thesis was on the social benefit of these street newspapers that are wildly popular everywhere throughout the U.S. They're on the coasts, in big cities, and we wanted to adopt that model and implement it here locally.
So vendors contribute content too, right? So it's not just full of you know, some writers and then these other folks are distributing it. It's created in part by the community it serves.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're looking for new ways to incentivize our street vendors to create and contribute content as well. We have some pieces written by our street vendors in our first four issues, and we're looking to expand and make that a bigger part of what we do.
So we just got an email comment from Lyra. She says there's an alarming number of people panhandling in Albuquerque and that it's off-putting for tourists and residents. But she says she'd rather pay to treat and meet panhandlers' underlying needs, shelter, food, treatment, employment, rather than remove them from the street and put them in jail. What do you think about what Lyra's saying here?
Well, I think it's really important that we don't try to criminalize our way to a better community. I don't think that that's a successful way of going about addressing the problem in our communities. I think the best thing that we can do is give these people a voice, give them a platform, give them, if someone's out in the middle of the community asking for help, that's something that I think that we should take a little bit more seriously rather than try to criminalize our way away from.
Well, what about these business concerns? Maybe you're listening and you're a business owner and you feel like panhandling is having a negative impact on the business in your shop. Give us a call. We want to hear from you, too. That's 277-5866. Albuquerque got a new law late last year banning folks from standing near freeway exits or in medians and physically interacting with people in cars and vice versa. People arrested for violating the new law could face up to 90 days in jail or a $500 fine, according to the ACLU. The measure itself was passed unanimously by the city council and cites pedestrian safety as its top concern. None of Albuquerque's city councilors would agree to be on the show today to talk about this new law with constituents. They were advised by the city legal department not to participate. No one from new Mayor Tim Keller's administration is here today either. But Two-Way Street's founders and reporters have been following the pedestrian safety ordinance, as it's called, through the city council. How does this ordinance affect your newspaper and the vendors?
Well, it criminalizes certain interaction between pedestrians and motorists. And that has severely affected our ability to get our paper into the hands of people in the community. We've had to address that through best practices and encourage our street vendors to engage face-to-face with pedestrians in their street vending districts. But as of now, our only solution is to recommend that they not engage at all with any sort of motorists.
And now, is that, you said that Two-Way Street is part of a network of street newspapers across the country. What's the common practice?
Well, it's actually across the nation. We're part of the International Network of Street Newspapers, and it's based out of Glasgow, Scotland. But this is an issue in certain areas, but they seem to have taken the same approach that we have, where we really try to focus on cultivating that face-to-face interaction between street vendors and the community. It builds a sense of place wherever our street vendors are. It better connects people who might not understand the background or personal needs or situations of the people that they're interacting with in their community spaces. So it's a great way to bring our communities together.
So this is passed on a unanimous vote of the council, the pedestrian safety ordinance. It was 8-0 with one councillor absent. Nick, did that surprise you?
Yeah, I think we were certainly expecting some of our more progressive city councillors to be a voice of reason against this particularly regressive policy. We at Two-Way Street support vehemently any kind of pedestrian safety ordinance. However, we feel that there are ways to go about promoting pedestrian and motorist safety that do not disproportionately affect low-income families, communities of color, single mothers and women, veterans reintegrating into society, prisoners, previous prisoners who've paid their debt to society, preventing them from reintegrating. So we're really trying to, we're really trying to find a way that isn't quite so regressive in promoting pedestrian public safety.
Now, you run a newspaper. Does this ordinance bring up constitutional issues of free speech for you?
Well, yeah. I think the ordinance itself, I feel, affects in an unconstitutional way our ability to associate within our communities, our ability to freely speak our minds, and yeah, with our organization, it has become an issue of free press. Our newspaper can't quite see the level of dissemination that we'd like to see if our street vendors could interact with people who are behind the wheel while they're stopped at a stoplight.
The local affiliate of the American Civil Liberties Union has challenged laws in New Mexico cities, and they've filed a lawsuit in federal court arguing that Albuquerque's ordinance is unconstitutional. They won't talk about it today with us because of negotiations in a related lawsuit. Do you solicit donations in public? Have you ever given money to someone from your car? Will this new law in Albuquerque stop you? Or are you a law enforcement officer who enforces these laws? We want to hear from you. Give us a call at 277-5866. We're talking about anti-panhandling laws around the state today. This is Let's Talk New Mexico, and I'm your host, Marisa DeMarco. We're going to take a quick break.
The law firm of Rothstein Donatelli is committed to supporting KUNM. Since 1976, the firm has litigated Native American law, criminal defense, wrongful death, and civil rights in New Mexico and nationwide. Info at rothsteinlaw.com.
Support comes from PREA America, offering audits and consulting for the Prison Rape Elimination Act, which protects vulnerable incarcerated populations like women and children. On the web at PREAAmerica.com, PREAAmerica.com.
Vessel Health and Dr. Harvey White support KUNM. Vessel Health provides preventive cardiovascular care, featuring its launch program designed to start clients on a voyage of long-term health. Treat the system, not the symptom. VesselNM.com.
Johann Sebastian Bach sent half a dozen concertos as a job application. He never got the job, in fact, never heard back at all. He was completely ignored. But those half a dozen pieces of music are now immortal. Bach and his Brandenburg Concertos on the next Performance Today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM. I'm your host, Marisa DeMarco. We've got calls coming in. We're going to take one now from Lynn in Albuquerque. Good morning, Lynn.
Good morning.
What's your comment or question for us today?
Yes, I wanted to share first a little context and preface. It's not about me, but as context, I am involved in the socioeconomic programs of the community. My church does serve breakfast at St. Martin's. I work for one of the companies that does Medicaid Centennial. I do it because I do have a passion and understanding for the needs of the community. So as context, I fully support everything everyone's saying about what we need to do. I'm familiar with the services. They're wonderful. They're plentiful. Of course, there could always be more. My concern with the new median law, whatever they're calling it, is we actually almost hit someone one night. It was dark. We were at the Paseo, Frontage Road, I-25 area where Target is and stuff. And I don't know if the person stepped off maybe just to stretch or reposition, but we almost hit someone. And for me to think that I hit someone and could have hurt someone or killed someone, it crossed my mind that that would be really sad too. So I do think that there's a safety element to it that has to be addressed. I actually spoke to a gentleman one night at the corner when I was stopped and it was dark. And I said, could you just please wear a white T-shirt or a white jacket? I can't even see you. And yes, I handed him my change. Yes, I will continue to hand out change or food if I have it. And I am stopped. I don't care about the ticket. I think it's a safety issue that has to be factored in is all I wanted to say, in addition to just, again, what everyone's saying, continuing to work on the true root cause that leads people to have a need to seek support in this way. So as someone who almost hit someone in any situation, that really bummed me out, and I'd like to just think of it. Include the safety. That's all.
Thanks, Lynn. Do you think that this law will help with that? Do you think that
you know, making it an arrestable offense potentially. Someone could face a fine or jail time for being in these areas will help create a situation where pedestrians are not in danger as frequently.
You know, that's the catch-22. I have thought about it. I don't believe at all that criminalizing the action is the answer. I think we just have to continue. And when I talk to people at the corner, I'll say, you're using St. Martin's, right? You're using your community services. Do you need information? Since I am involved, I'm familiar with them. So, no, I do not think that criminalizing it is the answer on either side. And that's the catch-22 of the whole thing. But I do think there is a safety issue having experienced it. But to answer your question, no, it's not a criminal offense.
You know, I think that the pedestrian safety and bicycle safety is a real issue in New Mexico. And it is a real issue in Albuquerque. The rates are really high. It's something that we've reported on before. So I'd be interested to hear from other folks about what they think are good solutions to those issues that we face. And you guys, you guests, can think about that too. Do you have something, Nick?
Well, yeah. So and thank you, Lynn, for your generosity to the population. There are a lot of moving parts of this law. There's the one component of this law that I agree that this is, I think, maybe the most important component. That prohibits anyone from congregating or assembling within 6 feet of a travel lane of a highway exit ramp, which is kind of the situation that was just mentioned here in this situation. And I think that, you know, if we're going to use this law to regulate something, I think that that's the best way to use this kind of regulation. The other moving parts of this law are, of course, not just limiting it to the medians, but also it includes sidewalks and medians in this law. So it's illegal to interact with a vehicle as a pedestrian from either the median or the sidewalk. But I'd say that the most draconian part of this legislation is really the limit on interaction between such broad classifications of individuals. If you're a pedestrian or if you're a motorist, there is no lawful way in this city ordinance to interact with the other class of citizens. So it's a tremendous limit on what we're able to do from our position on the sidewalk or anywhere really in our public spaces.
Jenny, what do you think?
I think a lot about principle and pragmatism. As someone who works at a public health organization, we think about the good of the common. And I think that there are always, I think the intent of this ordinance and other such quality of life ordinances is really that people do want to make a difference and they want to make change. And so I think that if we think about the good of the common and we think about individual liberties, there's always a tension in that. It's very fundamental. And I think that's the case here. And so I think then if we think about a real public safety risk and how we reduce that risk just pragmatically, we need to understand the problem. I did read the UNM study that the ordinance references. I don't pretend to be thoroughly familiar with it, but I didn't see a lot in there about panhandling. I saw mm-hmm. other sort of behavioral kind of what Nick's talking about. And so I think we need to look at really understanding the problem, at prioritizing the mitigation efforts and then measuring those. So will this really reduce panhandling? And is addressing panhandling really getting at the issue of this public safety issue that we have of injuries for bicyclists and pedestrians in our community? I don't know that that's a fit.
All right. We're going to take a call from Jane in Mountain Air, New Mexico. Good morning, Jane. Good morning, Jane. Are you there?
I live in Mountain Air. I do drive a lot in Albuquerque in any given week. And I'm also just appalled, actually, at the massive number of panhandlers on the street, mostly because this country shouldn't allow something like that. We're the wealthiest nation in the world, really, and we have people on the street begging for money. And I have a real problem with criminalizing it. Does it strike anyone as absurd that you would fine a panhandler $500? I can't afford $500. And thank heavens I don't have to beg on the street, but that's insane. That is just insane. I don't even get that. And throwing them in jail. So you're adding insult to injury in this situation. I do hear the safety issue, and there's got to be a better way of addressing that. It really feels to me that the ordinance is a move against poverty-stricken people hiding behind the smokescreen of public safety. I have problems with criminalizing it. That's not the way to do it, and it's not a good use of our police force. You know, when I can drive down an interstate and have a motorcycle blow in between lanes at a much greater speed than I'm driving, where are the police then? And now you're going to use the police to pick up panhandlers and fine them money they don't have? This doesn't make any sense to me as a public issue.
All right. Thank you, Jane. We got an email comment from David. He says he wishes panhandlers weren't in intersections, but that Albuquerque should provide a basic income for everyone so that no one is on the street. We're going to take a call now from Lisa in Albuquerque. Good morning, Lisa.
Hi. I'm a behavioral health practitioner in Albuquerque, and I've been working with I'm speaking on my own behalf, but I work with Albuquerque Interfaith on the mental health action team to try to organize around the behavioral health 8-cent tax that was passed to make sure that there's a portion that goes for homelessness and those kinds of support services for people who are out there on the streets that have mental illness. Not everybody who is homeless has mental illness, but a great proportion of it does get provided. And after our behavioral health system was decimated, really what the options available for people to get help, the largest mental health provider in our city right now is the jails. So without support systems for people outside of jail, without transportation to get to and from your appointments, without housing for people who are struggling to survive or who are facing trauma or other disabilities, mental or otherwise, it's pretty hard for them to get in the need. I really liked the program where they put the signs up that said, dial 311 to donate to this program, mm-hmm. so that you can help people on the street. And then it also said for the people who are panhandling, here's a place to get help. And for a while there were, you know, vans picking up people from the corner and taking them and getting them food. And I wonder what happened to that program. It seemed like a more proactive approach to the situation with panhandling. And I was more inclined to call 311 and donate. And I was more inclined to direct people to get that kind of help, because like other callers have said, I would rather help with the source of the problem, the why these people are homeless and on the street and panhandling, rather than hand them cash myself. Although there's a certain level of entitled guilt that happens when you drive up in a car and you notice everything that you mm-hmm. have and you stand there and think of what it's like to be there. So I just wonder what happened to that program where people could donate to the city and the city would help these people find housing and food and shelter and jobs, even if they just worked for a day. Sometimes working for a day is too much for somebody. But on the other hand, I don't really want to hand cash to somebody because I want to make sure it really is going to go to help them and not continue to feed the cause of the reason they're there in the first place.
Yeah, Lisa, and like you're saying, I think that's really a common experience for a lot of folks is, you know, you pull up to an intersection and you are confronted by whether or not you should help someone, whether it's the right thing to do, whether it's the right kind of help. And it does come from a position of privilege also. So I think that feeling that you're pointing to is probably really familiar to a lot of folks. Right, Jenny?
I think when we take a restorative justice, what can we do to change the conditions that are causing these people to be on the street, rather than a retaliative or a punitive response to it, I think everybody's a lot happier, even, you know, that whether it's the police or the people handing out the money or the people who are receiving the services. I think when people are treated as human beings and treated with respect, and you really listen to the reasons they're in that situation in the first place and try to connect them with help, you know, the challenge is that there isn't enough. Even that 8-cent tax that raises a good deal of money, it's not enough to provide for all the need that we have, but it was always intended to fill in the gaps between the services that are available, like at the hospitals and treatment centers and the other services that people have called in saying that they work with. Getting somebody to that program is sometimes the biggest challenge between people getting help and getting not. And that's what some of those programs are about: supportive housing, transportation to and from appointments, a place where when people do get out of jail, they can get connected with support services instead of being left out on the street. You know, many people don't know that when somebody's been in jail and they get released, they just get, you know, released back onto the corner downtown in, you know, the early hours of the morning when nothing is open and they really don't have any access. And one of the things that tax is going to go to do is to set up a center for helping those people coming out of jail to get services so they don't have to go back into jail.
All right. Thanks for your call, Lisa. We also got another Twitter comment. This listener says, it's a shame that people are ashamed of people in our streets. She says it's a shame that city councilors won't talk about it and that it takes a lot to ask for a dollar on the street for the bus. Councilor Diane Gibson said she couldn't be on the show today because of a scheduling conflict, but she sent an email saying that ever since she got her spot on the council in 2013, her office has been receiving complaints about people standing in medians or on exit ramps. People told her they felt like it was risky to drive past those folks. She said it was important to her that the bill not prohibit one specific activity like panhandling, but any activity at all in those areas, including firefighters holding boots or advertisers twirling signs. We also got a comment via email. This person said pedestrian deaths in the International District in Albuquerque are partly because of the lack of street lights. They say they're not getting a good response from the city and the problems are not being fixed. We're going to shift gears here for a bit and talk about an anti-panhandling ordinance that's being repealed in Gallup, New Mexico. We've got Barry Klopfer on the line. He's an attorney in Gallup. Good morning, Barry.
Good morning.
Barry, how is the law in Gallup different from Albuquerque's?
Well, I'll start off by saying I'm not real familiar with Albuquerque's or what is proposed, but from what I can tell from listening in on the conversation and being real familiar with Gallup's ordinances, is Gallup's is a much more general prohibition. You know, for example, I'm looking at the statute right now, and it's there's just a straight-up prohibition. It says a solicitation prohibited where you come closer than 5 feet to a person solicited unless and until the person solicited indicates that he or she wishes to make a donation. So Gallup's ordinance is a prohibition on speech pretty clearly.
And it also, Gallup's ordinance also is looking at aggressive panhandling. Is that right?
Marketing campaign. You know, there's a component of the statute called aggressive solicitation, but it's in the same statute of the general prohibition against solicitation, and they both carry the same penalty.
So, do you think Gallup's law violates the Constitution?
Oh, definitely.
And how is that?
Well, it's a request for alms is a historic, speech. You know, it's no different than when you are in church and a basket comes across your legs and you're asked to donate money to the church. Well, that wasn't solicited, and that would be in violation of the Gallup ordinance.
Yeah, and did you think the ordinance was being abused by law enforcement in your city?
What's that?
Do you think Gallup's ordinance was being abused by law enforcement?
Well, what was happening in Gallup is that people were being charged for solicitation, but when it came time for trial, and I used to be the public defender in Gallup, so I'm pretty familiar with the criminal aspect, the back end of the consequence of these ordinances, the city prosecutor would simply dismiss the case because they didn't want to see it challenged. So that's how it was being abused.
Yeah, so these cases would go to court, and then they would just kind of get dropped, right?
They would give up because they know that they don't want to challenge, and they want to continue to have the arrest authority.
So you and the ACLU brought these concerns recently to the Gallup city attorney.
Yeah, fortunately, we've had a new city attorney, and he seemed amenable to listening to our concerns and hopefully effectively communicating them to the councilman and the mayor.
All right. Well, we're going to speak with that city attorney right after the break. We're talking about anti-panhandling laws in the state. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM, and I'm Marisa DeMarco. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Popejoy Hall's performance by Palabolas, a company that plays with perspective, human motion, and the idea of dance itself. Friday, January 19th, tickets and information at popejoypresents.com.
Last month, people found gifts in their stockings delivered by flying reindeer. This month, some will find gifts in their shoes. All year, we find gifts of cars and trucks in our ears. When you donate your unwanted vehicle to KUNM, it gets sold and voila! It shows up in your radio as great programs like this one. Not brought to you by flying reindeer, but by generous listeners just like you. Make it happen. Call 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
A new Department of Justice memo rescinds the Obama-era policy that loosened marijuana prosecutions in states. This has tribes already in the cannabis business wondering what the future will hold. We'll talk with experts and tribal leaders about their hopes and concerns for the marijuana business on the next Native America Calling.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Marisa DeMarco, and we're talking about laws that cities have created around the state against panhandling. What do you think? Do the safety considerations for pedestrians outweigh potential problems folks might have with anti-panhandling laws? Do you think the law in Albuquerque can deter pedestrians or panhandlers? Have you seen it working? Or are you a business owner with concerns about panhandling? How would you like to see poverty and homelessness addressed in your city? What do you think about all this? Give us a call toll free at 1-877-899-5866. Gallup City Attorney Curtis Hayes is on the line this morning. Thanks for speaking with us. Good morning, Curtis.
Good morning.
So how often were you seeing these kind of panhandling cases come up? This law in Gallup was on the books for years and years.
Well, it's been on the books since 2003, and I don't know the history. I've only been in the city attorney position for 6 months now. But, the ACLU out of Albuquerque had done an inspection of public records request to the municipal court here, and I believe that they determined that last year 8 people had been charged with violating the ordinance. One of them was arrested, and the other 7 were cited in. So it's not an ordinance that got a whole lot of use.
And so you started hearing about these constitutional concerns from Barry, who we were speaking to earlier. What was your reaction?
Well, to do the research, to figure out if what he was saying was accurate, and frankly, he's right. I mean, we've got a problem. The Supreme Court changed the test as far as determining what kind of laws are content neutral about 3 years ago, and if you look around the country, the kinds of aggressive panhandling ordinances that Gallup has that were adopted back in the 1990s and 2000s are pretty much uniformly being struck down. At the time they were written, they would have passed constitutional muster, but under the new test, they're not sustainable.
And so you recommended that the Gallup City Council rescind this law, is that right?
Correct, and we'll be taking that to council probably next month for an actual repeal. But in the meantime, I've directed the police department not to be enforcing the ordinance.
And is there any pushback to the idea of rescinding this law in Gallup?
There is. There's most of the panhandling that goes on in Gallup is not problematic. You know, panhandling is a constitutionally protected right. And the vast majority of panhandling that goes on in Gallup is respectful. You know, you're asked for a donation, you say no, or you give them a donation, and that's the end of the transaction. But there is a small percentage that is problematic, where there's threatening behavior, there's safety issues. So there is some pushback of, you know, do we need something on the books? And, you know, the memo that I sent to the police departments alerted them to the fact that there's a lot of other laws and ordinances that are on the books that deal with the threatening behavior, you know, the assault, the battery, false imprisonment, extortion laws. You know, there's laws on the books that deal with the public safety issues generally that are problematic with some panhandling.
Right. So assault is assault, and those are the laws that should be used to prosecute assault. But does your panhandling law cover anything that is not currently covered by your city's criminal code?
It does, and that's part of the problem. I think Barry pointed out, I think, what's probably the most problematic section in the ordinance, which is that 5-foot restriction. But most of it deals with panhandling that's of a threatening behavior. And that's what we really want to focus on. Our police department has about 1,000 calls per service per officer on an annual basis. And so they don't really have time to be dealing with panhandling as an issue per se. They've got to be focused solely on threatening behavior that affects public safety. And that's what we want to focus on and divorce it from the panhandling.
And Santa Fe has something pretty similar about aggressive panhandling on the books, right?
You know, I haven't looked. I looked at Albuquerque's new ordinance, but I did not look at what Santa Fe has.
Barry and Curtis, these kind of laws, there was a time where these kind of laws were getting passed kind of everywhere, right? And I think Albuquerque even had one that was eventually struck down.
Correct.
Yeah. Nick, do you know anything about that sweep of laws around the country?
Well, not particularly. I am familiar with the previous aggressive panhandling ordinance and kind of how it ties into this one. But, you know, as far as beyond Albuquerque or beyond, you know, our history, I can't speak to it.
All right. We're going to take a call from Tony in Albuquerque. Good morning, Tony.
Hi. I'm from Albuquerque, and I've had some experience with this same kind of thing in Cincinnati, where I lived briefly. I'm sorry, I turned off the radio. I apologize for that. But in Cincinnati, you know, they had an anti-panhandling law on the books, which the police there ultimately ended up using quite aggressively to curtail just general speech and assembly of a political nature. And whether that's, you know, folks who are, you know, protesting against Planned Parenthood on Lomas, or you know, on the left, folks who are protesting about you know, the Israel-Palestine conflict in Nob Hill. You know, I think it's a kind of a slippery slope to create something that criminalizes you know, assembly rights and speech rights of that nature. I mean, our public thoroughfares are a really important political forum. So I've had that kind of experience in Cincinnati, and you know, there we ultimately did sue the city, and the city did settle. So there are costs being imposed on the taxpayer, you know, taking these risks of a lawsuit. And then finally, before I'll just kind of let folks, you know, continue with the conversation, I do think it's awfully pious to say that the concern here is public safety. You know, no motorist is really at risk from these panhandlers. I mean, they're in cars. The only people whose safety is at risk are the panhandlers. And if we were really, truly concerned about their safety, I think we'd be awfully concerned about the fact that they have to sleep outside at night, that they're not getting enough to eat, and they're, you know, unable to access health care. So, you know, I kind of don't believe that safety is the real motivation. And it really is just this, you know, we'd like to cosmetically fix the problem.
All right. We also have an email comment from Hakim. He says, disappearing people who aren't pleasing to the eye is what America does, from immigration to incarceration to panhandling. He says the Albuquerque ordinance privileges people with cars, but he'll gladly take a fine to help a fellow human. And that's an interesting point in this conversation as well, is that the ordinance does apply to folks in cars who are physically interacting with folks who are in the median. So if you're driving up and you reach in your pocket, pull out a dollar and hand it out the window, you're also subject to this law and potentially fine and jail time, right, Nick?
Absolutely. You know, and it is important to note that it's not just the panhandlers who are criminalized here under this law. It's also the people who would be kind enough to give. And I think one of the points that was just made from the caller, the cost to the city of enforcing this ordinance, and they will be fining people under it, but what do they really expect to get from the people they're fining? These are people who are out there panhandling, and yes, there are very real costs to the city associated with this ordinance. Enforcement costs, costs, legal costs with the current ACLU challenge. And I just don't think it's something that our city can currently afford right now. You know, we're $27 million in the hole now with the Albuquerque Rapid Transit project, which, by the way, picks up and drops off passengers in the medians. So I just don't think that our community can shoulder this burden at the moment.
All right, we're going to take a call from Tiska in Albuquerque. Good morning, Tiska.
Thank you, Marissa. I'm listening to so many wonderful comments this morning, so I won't try to repeat all of them. I think this new ordinance is ridiculous. It's ridiculous on the resources of the city and for these poor folks trying to, just get by and survive, being fined $500. How crazy is that? That's not going to happen. And I really would urge people, the public who are calling in and just us ordinary people like myself, to try to hold back on such harsh judgment. These folks, can you imagine? It's an act of desperation to try to get money by standing on a median. You know, give if your heart is moved, and let them be if your heart is not moved. I think that we need to change this. I'm going to be calling my city councilor. I hope everyone else will, too. This is not a good law in terms of law, and it's not a good human response to the problem. We really do need to get and look at the source and how our lives that we live with privilege may be complicit to what's happening to so many people who are having to live out there. And oh my God, the people that have been killing homeless people, targeting them, shame on them. And that's also something that I'd like to see addressed rather than just going after the folks. And I too doubt that the concern for safety is the real reason. I think it is a cosmetic thing. We don't want to look. We don't want to see what our lives are also complicit in. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your comment, Tiska. We also got a Facebook comment from Dixon. He says, so far, the courage to set up homeless camps where assistance can be organized isn't there. But he also says that toleration of panhandlers is counterproductive. We're going to take a call now from Josh in Albuquerque. Good morning, Josh.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to say that I think this law is kind of dangerous in the sense that it's just part of a long history of APD targeting homeless people. And I feel like they did this with the reverse drug sting, where they would sell homeless people drugs. In one case, they sold a man crack for literally the jacket off his back. And I think that it has nothing to do with public safety, and we need to figure out a way to actually house these people.
Yeah, we have a Twitter comment from Sue. She says the way to stop panhandling is to stop giving people money. She also says putting panhandlers in jail or finding them doesn't make sense. She points to Seattle and says they have a homeless village there. Nick, we heard from one of your contributors this week, David, who said that he hasn't seen the panhandling ordinance being enforced. Is this something that you're hearing from other people who vend two-way street?
Well, you know, we haven't seen any enforcement. We've also kind of changed our behavior so that it would not be enforced on any of our street vendors. Although, you know, we have seen incidents of police, approaching and interacting with some of our street vendors on their turf. We did assist one of our street vendors in filing a complaint with the Civilian Police Oversight Agency. But, you know, we have not seen any enforcement, really, of this ordinance, although enforcement isn't necessarily something that we want to wait around to see.
And we've had a couple of callers who are talking about the way that the new panhandling ordinance sets up a situation where folks have to interact with police potentially more. Is that something that is concerning for you?
Well, you know, we like to promote any kind of interaction, whether it's our street vendors interacting with people in the community or street vendors interacting with police, which is something that happens. Human interaction is really at the crux of what we're trying to achieve through our street newspaper. So the interaction between our street vendors and police is something that we would assume as just part of the turf. But to have positive and productive interactions with our police is something that is really important to us. And with the potential for enforcement over speech or association in our public spaces, sometimes it's hard to find where that line is best walked.
And what's next for you?
Well, next for us, we're always looking for more street vendors. We're looking for more content contributors to get involved with Two-Way Street ABQ. Our next issue will be launching February 3rd. We would love anyone to be a part of it who's interested in our project. Like us on Facebook. Come to our weekly meetings. They're open to all. Be a part of this discussion in the community.
What do you recommend for people of Albuquerque who are interacting with folks who are panhandling or who might be vending two-way street?
You know, we're all just people. If you're driving past a panhandler and you see them on the side of the road, that is a person in your community too. I think it's really important, even if you don't have anything to give, that we're making sure that we treat each other with respect and with humility. If you're driving past someone who's in trouble, the very least that you can give, and I think that something that everyone can give freely is a smile and a nod and some human compassion.
And you've been here today for the whole hour listening to all the comments and questions that are coming in. Did it spark any new ideas in this conversation that I'm sure is very familiar to you?
Well, you know, I would just love to see people who aren't part of the privileged class, or people who may have experienced homelessness or may have experienced adversity in their lives. There's a place for you in this discussion. I would love to see you running for city council. We need the right kind of voices in this fight at the highest level. And if you're an institutionally disadvantaged person, I want to see more of these people in the public spotlight and on the pedestal.
Last quick Twitter comment from Tita, who says her faith in humanity is being restored by today's callers. We're coming to the end of the hour today, and I want to point people to our website, KUNM.org, where you can find links to all of the organizations we've touched on today. We contacted 18 people to talk about Albuquerque's anti-panhandling law today on the show, Albuquerque City Councilors and their analysts to talk about this law that the council passed. Unfortunately, we don't have that perspective for you today, but we're always down to do these interviews. interviews. The same goes for Albuquerque's new mayor. Our studio door is always open. As soon as we have more info, we'll get it to you. Thanks for joining us today on Let's Talk New Mexico. Nick Votero, co-founder of Two Way Street, Jenny Metzler, executive director of healthcare for the homeless, Gallup attorney Barry Klopfer, Curtis Hayes, Gallup city attorney. If you missed any of our program, or if you'd like to share it with friends, the audio of this show will be posted to our website, KUNM.org, where you can also find previous shows. Thanks to Marino Spencer, our engineer today. Sarah Trujillo screened your calls. Victor Onimole live tweeted the show. Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. I'm Marisa DeMarco. This is KUNM.